Welcome to the DevCon Archives, featuring top sessions from the latest DevCon, which took place in Bangkok in November 2024. These episodes spotlight some of the best talks from the largest Ethereum developer conference, showcasing the technical advancements, mission, projects, and novel ideas shaping the Ethereum ecosystem. All talks have been recorded. You can find them on archive.devcon.org. Let's dive into today's featured talk.
Good afternoon! Good afternoon, DevCon! Wow, what a 4 days! What a 4 days it has been. It's great to see everyone here. We're going to begin our closing ceremony with a very interesting panel with a few distinguished guests and there's distinguished people here. I would like to invite to the stage four individuals: Aya Miguchi from the Ethereum Foundation, Nick of Long Now Foundation, Gub Sheep from 0xPark, co-founder of 0xPark, and Justin Glibert, also of 0xPark, for our closing panel before we get on with the rest.
Right. Good afternoon, and welcome to what I suspect will be a very special closing ceremony conversation with three people I have known and worked with now for many years, and about whom I could say a lot of very nice things. However, we all know that showing beats telling 9 times out of 10. So instead of telling you how brilliant Brian is, how encyclopedic Justin is, or how thoughtful Aya is, I'm just going to try to moderate a panel conversation at a deep enough level that you get to see these qualities directly for yourself. I should probably tell you who we are, though, and why we're up here, and what we plan to talk about for the next 38 minutes or so. Where's our time? There it is, 44 minutes, okay. I should also just say what an honor it was to be asked to moderate this closing conversation with all of you today. Thank you, Aya. I really appreciate that. And of course, Aya Miyaguchi needs no introduction to this crowd, really. Aya is the executive director and the eclectic dreamer of the Ethereum Foundation. Aya and I met ages ago, before she was working for the Ethereum Foundation even. And we met thanks to our shared appreciation for long-term thinking, about which I'll say some more in just a minute. There's a very good chance you saw Aya's talk on mandalas at the opening ceremony on Tuesday. And if we're lucky, I think we'll get to dive into that topic some more this afternoon. So please join me in giving a warm round of applause to Aya Miyaguchi. Sitting over to her left is Gub Sheep, aka Brian. And sitting to my right is Ludens, aka Justin. And these two founded a programmable cryptography research group called 0xPark. If at some point this week you have seen a frog hat, a frog beret, a frog shirt, a frog game, a frog necklace, or a frog made out of a printed circuit board that generates digital and collectible and proof-carrying frogs complete with complex backstories, well, then you have encountered one way that their work on programmable cryptography seems to have manifested itself here at the QSNCC this week. Can we get a big round of applause for Justin and Brian and all of the frogs? And so last and probably least informed about next generation cryptographic primitives is me, your moderator for this panel. My name is Nicholas Paul, though you can call me Nick. And for most of the last decade, I have been helping run a storied nonprofit in San Francisco, California called the Long Now Foundation. Long Now was founded in 1996 to foster long-term thinking on the timescale of 10,000 years. So, not the short now of this conference, but the long now of human civilization itself. More recently, I've started working on a new independent initiative that focuses on the thinking part of long-term thinking. And here at the outset of that initiative, there's a lot of what I call thinking about thinking. In other words, thinking about what it means to think, especially in an era of quote-unquote thinking machines. And so I've had a lot of conversations about this stuff with Brian and Justin and Aya over the years, and I've been coming to DevCon since DevCon 4 in Prague in 2018, mostly because I find it always invites me to think deeply and differently about that thing we call technology because we don't know what else to call it. Put concisely, I think frontier technology provides excellent food for thought, philosophic and poetic and aesthetic food for philosophic and poetic and aesthetic thought. My first DevCon, DevCon 4 in Prague in 2018, the panel conversation for that closing ceremony featured a thinker named Stuart Brand. I've got a clicker here. I think there's a picture of him if I do this. Oh, there we go. Great. That's Stuart Brand. Stuart, if you don't already know who I'm talking about, is a living legend, full stop. There are a few books and films about his life, and they're good, and I recommend checking them out. Stuart seems to have been involved in most of the most significant cultural scenes from the last 20th century, from the hippies to the hackers to the very first online communities and the very first uses of genomic technology for ecological conservation. He is also one of the founders of the Long Now Foundation, so I've been working with him for years now, and as a mild biographical note, he just so happens to also be my next-door neighbor. So Stuart is something of a hero to this quartet up here, and I mention length because at least part of tonight's conversation, I hope, is going to be about what it means to find yourself inspired by someone or something. We catch glimpses of this meaning in the phrase spiritual predecessor, which of course means not a literal predecessor like a parent or a grandparent, or perhaps someone who once held the job title that you yourself now hold, but rather someone who provided some of the fuel from which you've lit your own torch in life. You can even see this in the etymology of the words, spiritual predecessor and inspiration. They both come from the Latin inspirare, which means to breathe into. A spiritual predecessor breathes into us. And so we'll probably talk about that phenomenon a bit tonight, as well as the philosophical concept of subtraction that inspires the work of the Ethereum Foundation, as well as my own, and perhaps even that of Xerox PARC, though I'll let Brian and Justin kind of unpack and chime in on that a little bit later. But the very first question I want to open our discussion with this afternoon is a lot simpler and a lot more immediate. It has to do with the act of noticing. You'll notice that it's impossible to notice everything. And so what you notice is worth noticing. And I wonder, how many people here at DevCon 7 noticed that the year 2024 marks one full decade for DevCon, DevCon 0, a decade of thinking differently about all kinds of things? Let's see, where does this go next? There we go, all right. A decade of thinking differently about all kinds of things. And I'm curious what else people might have noticed here at the conference this week. I sincerely wish I could ask that question of all of you out there in the audience, but I think I'm actually gonna start with Aya. So Aya, what, if anything, did you notice this year?
First of all, is it possible to turn down the light?
Turn down the light. Request to turn down the light.
Is it possible to turn down the light? Sorry, I'm being annoying again. I just, with my respect to Stuart, and thank you, Nick, for joining to this conversation, because he is not just a moderator, as you probably already have noticed. Noticing. What do I notice at this DevCon? I do notice the people's mindset in the topics that are discussed in the conversations happening at this DevCon is, well, it used to be more about what do we need to do now, you know, what do we need to do now, or what's next level. But now I think I hear more conversation about what can happen or could happen in the future. So that difference is bigger this time, I think. And then part of it is because all the contributions were the design of the event, but also mainly all the different contributions by all different players. And it's very important that we are looking at this as a decade, but it's just a decade zero, right? So I think it's amazing that we are having this conversation with this group. Also, it looks like a random collection of people, but we talk about this type of conversation, like topics a lot, and then you saw the photo of Stuart, and this was the DevCon flag was very special for me. That was my first DevCon after I joined EF. It wasn't my first DevCon, but it was the first DevCon after I joined EF. But also, this was the Stuart's talk at the closing was really symbolized the time, like we started to show we're thinking everything differently. And that was the first DevCon. We invited people like Stuart Bland, Brewster Kahle, and then I think people started to recognize that this is something bigger than just technology. So that was very important. But also that was the first time I introduced the concept of subtraction for the first time. I don't know how much people really understood it. I don't think I explained it in the best way back then. But also it was meant to be just introduction. And when I reintroduced that in DevCon, at DevCon Bogota last time, that was the time I was finally able to explain from the actions that EF has made.
What do you think makes it so hard to explain?
So subtraction is always hard. It's actually it's too natural for me. So I say in the way like we resist the tendency to add. The natural tendency is we accumulate the power, keep adding, keep making things bigger. But it's actually, to me, it is more natural. I grew up in the culture where, you know, subtraction is not really rare. And because of that, I wasn't really aware what I was doing was something very different. And it was from the conversation with Albert Nee. He was the one who pointed out, hey, what we are doing is withdrawing, like withdrawal. And then I said, oh yeah, like it's actually, there's this aesthetic of subtraction, which I wrote in Japanese in PLAG. We have that in Japan, so let's call it subtraction. That's how we started. So it took another non-Japanese person to let me notice that was something actually natural. So like we actually need to remind, we have to let people notice that.
I love this idea of bringing in aesthetics to the idea of subtraction, because there's another thing that I want to talk about at subtraction with you guys around dimensionality and the dimensional affordances of subtraction as an approach to things. But aesthetics is also something that I think about a lot in dimensional terms. You know, a lot of discussion, especially around technology these days, is flattened into a discussion about good technology and bad technology and some smearing in the middle. And that's helpful sometimes. It can be clarifying because, like, it's nice to have whatever dimensions you do have. But if you're looking for higher dimensional considerations, the aesthetic paradigm is just a lot more useful. There's so much more going on in there. And so I'm kind of curious, this is how I think about it, but Brian, when I think about the dimensionality and the dimensional affordances of something like subtraction, why is something like addition a flattening move, whereas subtraction is an expansive move? Do you have some thoughts on that?
Yeah, so it's really interesting for me also to come to this DevCon and reflect on how different this experience has been for me compared with my first DevCon was also DevCon 4 back in Prague. And I remember the thing that I was just really struck by at that DevCon was how much space open there was for me as a newcomer. I was sort of hanging around the Ethereum Foundation orbit, helping out with various things. Some things related to education, some things related to communication, eventually started getting interested in things related to zero knowledge. And it was never really the case that there was never one directive or one narrative or one message that either the Ethereum space as a whole or the Ethereum Foundation, I felt, was pushing on me. And that really forced a certain kind of agency, a kind of critical thinking, a kind of empowerment that I don't think I've seen in basically any other community that I'd ever entered into. And what I realized was that if I really wanted to engage meaningfully with the Ethereum community, I would have to sort of think bigger than one direction, one narrative. And you know, one thing that me and Justin have talked about before is this idea that, for example, in maybe a traditional, in various kinds of more traditional organizations, you might be playing a game of Monopoly, right? In the game of Monopoly, there's one objective, which is basically you're trying to accumulate more Monopoly dollars. But this might be something closer or more akin to a game of Civ. So Civilization is a game where there's multiple different kinds of objectives and resources and win conditions. Maybe it's not even clear what it means for there to be a win condition. And that's something that I think, you know, the effects of subtraction were felt by me at that time, even if I didn't quite know that that was what it was called or that's how people were thinking about it. I just noticed the space.
Well, and the space is a cool affordance, too, because of the name Ethereum and Aether, right, which is kind of, you're thinking about air. And so when you think about how much more space there is between the atoms and air versus like a solid brick, you know, there's just so much more spaciousness in air. And so that breathing room, we talked about inspiration, right? Like inspiring to breathe into or conspiring to breathe with other people. There's something in even just like the naming essence of it. Do you have some thoughts about that? About the dimensionality stuff?
I have some thought about the space. The thing that's kind of interesting is even in, what was your example? Like bricks or rock or something like
that? Yeah, yeah.
Like even then, there's a ton of space.
Totally.
Like it's just massive space everywhere. And so I think that there's also another thing going on there where like you kind of like get the space you are looking for most of the time. I think it is true that you can have an environment that is more spacious, but I think we're like kind of like constantly being surprised by how much there is spaces everywhere.
But you're looking for it, and I don't know if everyone really is. Turns out, it's one of those things that if you look for it, you could find it. You know, that's extremely cool. This idea of looking for spaciousness and high dimensionality. I'm kind of curious if you could unpack what this spacious subtraction affordance is, how this relates to like worlding and how it supports the idea of worlding. You've done a lot of stuff around worlding here that people might be familiar with. And why addition is more of like a theme parky kind of thing, which I think you've talked about before.
Yeah, so about 2 years ago, Nick and Brian actually came to London. I don't know if you guys remember. And it's right around the time when I got really inspired by this artist called Yan Cheng. And Yan's work is centered around simulation. He basically builds these worlds with rules, etc., generative stories, and lets them unfold, and he makes kind of like stories and movies about them. And he wrote a book called Emissary's Guide to Worlding. And the core idea of Yan is that you kind of, there are like a bunch of roles that are very legible, like the role of the director, the role of the cartoonist. He also has this role that he calls the role of the hacker. There is like one very important role that you need when you work on worlds, which is the role of the emissary. Essentially, the role of the emissary is to take the world seriously for what it is and recognize that there's a fundamental equation at play, which is, it's almost like a fraction. Like the aliveness of a world, the numerator, the top part of the fraction is how much drama and generativeness happens in the world, and the bottom of the fraction is how much input there is from the creator. And there are systems out there that are like very interesting for people, but they require like constant influx of even greater work from a bunch of people in a very organized ways, right? And that's like what we were referring to in this conversation as theme parks. And a lot of the time people sit down and they decide to try to build a world, and they just like build a theme park where like they just add, you know, like the world is already there, but you have to add the popcorn stand and the rides because otherwise the people are going to get bored. And then you're like, oh, you know, and we need a security system because people steal the popcorn, and you just like keep adding and adding and adding, and you end up with this thing, which can be interesting, but it never outgrows the original creator in some ways. And so, yeah, Jan kind of like made popular this term of whirling, which is the active effort of putting a world together, which is actually a lot about not doing versus doing. Because if you do too much, the world is completely dependent on you for remaining alive in some ways.
Yeah, and in the same way that inspiring somebody isn't controlling them, but it does have some influence on them. I think, yeah, birthing worlds would definitely be the kind of thing you wouldn't want to totally lock in and control. When we talk about worlds, I mean, the aesthetic part of my brain is also lighting up and thinking about, like, we talk about things like the world of jazz or the world of, you know, heavy metal music or the world of rap music. And we know these are distinct worlds, but then we also know there's like places between these worlds, and there's the possibility of new worlds. And so I think aesthetically people are really sensitive to just how high dimensional aesthetic explorations can be. But again, I think when we think of technology, it's like how often are the aesthetics really front and center? You know, there's something really important there that I think. And for me, it also brings me back to Aya, to your opening ceremony talk on mandalas. And you had that image of all the just overlapping centers of gravity there. And when I think, I don't know, I might be kind of weird this way, but when I think about music and genres, or when I think about genres of discourse, the way people engage at a conference or something, or even when I think about what's happening in all these different rooms all week, I think about an image in my brain that looks a lot like those overlapping spheres. So do you have some thoughts on like the mandala concept that you had worked out earlier this week, that maybe, I mean, I'm sure a lot of these people saw it, but maybe some people missed it, and how that relates to worlding and subtraction, kind of pulling on this thread?
Yeah, it was actually another image that it clicked to me that this is another way to explain the same view that I had when I learned about mandalas, another meaning of mandala in Southeast Asia. If there anyone who were not, who was not there at the opening, it was the older system of governance in Southeast Asia, where there are circles of spheres of kingdoms that didn't have clear boundaries, but they existed as spheres, and then at the edges, the power was very blurry, right? So it is well connected with subtraction, because what Brian was saying, for example, Derek Spark, you were hanging around, around the EF. I don't even remember which team you were hanging around all the time, and then you were part of this research.
I don't even know if there was one team specifically, or even if there was a notion of specific teams that existed in the structure.
And then we didn't really try to fit him as where he should belong, right? If we did that, maybe we had limited, you know, his potentials, or his creativity. He ended up just playing with ZK earlier, and then made Dark Forest, right? And then what that was a stop.
And you had to let him have his world. And so I've got a question for you, Brian, which is like, do you feel like the world of programmable cryptography is inspired by the world of Ethereum?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the really interesting things that me and Justin have noticed is just how much this space creation, which is maybe another lens or artifact on subtraction, has done for us. And for the things that we try to bring to the ecosystem, we try to basically embed very similar concepts in. So, you know, one thing I think about, probably a lot of folks here have seen the frog game or the various frog bits floating around. Whenever we do these sorts of things at both the technological level, at the level of the design of the experience, we want to try to make it about the participants in the experience and not about like a linear track that we are prescribing or putting together. So everything from the fact that the digital frogs are digitally signed ZK-friendly signatures that live on your phone. They don't live in our servers. You can do whatever you want with your frogs. That also means that there's a certain responsibility because we don't store your frogs on our server. If you lose your frogs, that's on you. But what this means is because, you know, these frogs, they don't have like a 0x Park logo or something on them. And the frog bucket hats are pretty generic frog bucket hats. It's just sort of the abstract concept of frogs that is floating around. What that gives people is sort of the permission to take that concept and run with it however they want. And even over just the last 96 hours that this activation has been online, we've seen people do extremely creative and, you know, funny and technically interesting things that we could not have predicted. I think, you know, on the first day, people started making these frog trees of frog necklaces, and people started spinning up websites to coordinate and aggregate all the different frog QR codes and links that they could find. Some people started making, you know, frog stickers with special sorts of art. Some people started putting QR codes onto digital backpacks. And that's what I think really happens when it feels like the concept of a ZK-signed frog is not owned by someone.
Oh, so the world is alive in some sense. Like the fact that you can lose your frogs mean the world is being taken seriously.
There are stakes to frog ownership.
Say that again?
There are stakes to frog ownership.
I don't know if stakes is a bit overused here, I think.
You lose your frogs.
Yeah, I think, but it's less like what are the frogs at stakes. It's more like what can happen to the frogs in some ways, like define how much of a world it is, you know? There's no frog mommy you can go back to get your frogs that you've lost, right?
So do you think programmable cryptography would have come into being in the same way in a different ecosystem, or do you think this ecosystem's shaped the way that programmable cryptography is showing up in the world right now?
I mean, okay, so there's no question that there's an impact, right? I think the thing I find interesting here is that, and I don't think it's being shown enough, which is that Ethereum is as much a technological object as it is a cultural object, right? It's not just technology, it's culture as well. And when you have something that has multiple dimensions, you can kind of like make different things load bearings at different times. If you have something that is purely technological and the technology doesn't work, then you have failed in some sense. Oh, you can kind of promise that it will work better at some point, but there is a thing where almost like a support network around you means you can take more risks. I think that having an object that has multiple dimensions makes it more anti-fragile in some sense. And so what I find really interesting with the Ethereum ecosystem is that in general, there's a lot of energy for things that on a surface level might look like playful or silly or not going anywhere. But actually, in many ways, I think this is almost like an immune system for making sure that excess talent and excess capital gets distributed to a lot of different kinds of experiments. Like one sentence we use at Zurich Spark quite often is, when something is going in a strange direction or not successful, we say, that's an experiment worth enabling. Not like this is a failure or something like that. And I think the great thing with the Ethereum ecosystem is that it creates a lot of experiments worth being enabled. And you both kind of like increase your rate of trying things, but at the same time, you give a lot of space for things to grow. And one thing with cryptography, and we see it when we interface with academics or with the industry outside the Ethereum ecosystem, is that cryptography at this stage, outside what it can do very well and has been doing for many decades, it's almost like going back to square one in computing. And people don't want to go back to square one because they're like, I'm used to all of this nice stuff. Like, why would I go back to square one? And so in some ways, having a place where going back to square one actually has been done in recent memory, you know, like Ethereum has gone back to square one like a decade ago. So because it started at square one. I think like this almost like knowledge, like it's still within this generation that this has happened, does create a lot of space.
Well, going back to square one reminds me again of subtraction, so not to just completely hit this note again, but I think there's something important about being able to let go of things too. You know, for there's this analogy that sometimes I bust out with people about ground apes, which are really good at grabbing stuff. If a ground ape grabbed me, I'd be in trouble, right? They're really strong and they can grab stuff. But arboreal apes that are swinging through the jungle, they can grab stuff too, that's important, but they have an edge on the ground apes in that they can let go of things. And it turns out letting go of things is like an important precondition for swinging through the canopy of jungles, right? And so this letting go, it's kind of a subtraction concept, but letting go of things is really hard, but really, really important. It's not just, you can't just grab new things without letting go of old things. You know, there has to be this moment where you're just kind of, I mean, I guess in this analogy, you're just hanging in the air. And I mean, I'm sure a lot of people here have felt that feeling of letting go of something, hanging in the air a little bit. That's an interesting feeling. I'm always talking to people about it in a more philosophical or cultural context where we're talking about language, right? You know, and so, of course, you know, I said in some of my prefatory remarks something about, you know, we call it technology because we don't know what else to call it. Well, the first thing you have to do if you want to figure out what else to call it is just let go of what you're calling it. If you're hanging on to that super tight, you're just never going to create, again, space. So if everyone's tracking, there's a bingo card here with like space, subtraction, aesthetics, worlding, and we're just going to hit all of these a lot because they end up being really, really interconnected from where I'm seeing things. This idea of the cultural object as well, this cultural dimension, right? Different dimensions have different affordances, different strengths. And like you said, sometimes in a dynamic environment, you need to beef up other dimensions at different times as a response. That's cool if you can do it.
It's like in Civ, you can spend all your money, but you have not lost. Whereas in Monopoly, if you lose your money, you spend all of your money, you have lost.
Totally. And the cultural stuff is really important. It's really interesting how important the cultural stuff is, because I think we have a default way of thinking about technology, especially frontier technology. We think of frontier technology being on the frontier of a technological frontier. Like the nature of the frontier is technological, which means if you want to push out the frontier, you throw technology at it and the frontier moves. But I think we've recently seen a lot of examples, at least during my like adult lifetime, seen a lot of examples of people that are pushing on a frontier with a bunch of technology, but the frontier is not budging. It doesn't move. You're not actually getting this new world that you were thinking you were going to get. People aren't buying whatever you're selling. They're not excited about your vision of the future. And it's like, well, why not? We threw a lot of techno capital at this problem. Why is the techno capital not fixing the thing, Justin? Make it fix the thing. And I think part of it is like, If you're flexible and you're open to other dimensions, you can start thinking about the fact that these frontiers might be in their nature more philosophical, more poetic, more aesthetic. Again, don't ask the barber if you need a haircut, but I think this is a really interesting time for these things to be on the frontier, because a lot of what I see out here, from the frogs all the way through some of the film stuff that's been showcased here, and of course the amazing art, the dancing, the backgrounds, all of this stuff, I mean, a lot of it has, I don't want to say it has little to do with technology, but it's kind of in another dimension. It's another dimension.
Well, one thing I want to say is, like, I think it's easy to take a lot of that stuff as flavor text and think like, oh, you know, this is a XYZ conference and everything else is just added to be nice. But I think to the trained eye, you can actually like start drawing the differences between these things and see when something is more of like a coherent object together. Mm-hmm. Have you start seeing like if we make up like some like new unit, like an integration factor or something, where like multiple dimensions gets integrated together, as opposed to like you have one main dimensions and the other one are flavor text. Okay. Where have you seen like that amount of integration happen and grow up over time? I suppose in Ethereum you must have seen it grow, or at least change.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I've always been just very perplexed by this stuff, because I'll go into these technical sessions and everything is pretty much directly over my head. But the thing that's not over my head are like these weird notes that I'm hearing, almost like when you hear the refrigerator turn on, or like when the electricity is not really well grounded in like your hotel room and you hear like a buzzing sound. Like every now and then I'll be in one of these rooms and I won't understand anything that Brian's saying. Brian is dropping knowledge bombs on the entire room about something, and there's math symbols on the screen behind him, and I'm just hearing some other buzzing note and I'm going, what is that? Does anyone else hear that note? That's an interesting kind of thing.
I maybe want to go back to the point about language and letting go as well, because I think that's very related and a very interesting thing here. One thing that I've observed about Ethereum and cryptography is that Well, with cryptography is something that, in order to achieve its maximal social value, it's sort of almost by the nature of the technology must be maximally open. It contrasts with this with something like AI, where if I have a really powerful new AI architecture and model, and I don't tell that model to the world, but I put it behind an API, it still is able to create enormous social value. Cryptography, if I invent a new zero-knowledge protocol that's super performant and amazing, and I don't tell it to anybody, then, you know, it's effectively worthless, right? So cryptography has this effect of being more like language, where the more people speak it, the more people who can wield it as a tool, the more social value it creates. And it's not actually obvious, though, that even though this is the case, cryptography will naturally develop in this direction. You know, actually, with the first generation of cryptography, when we think of crypto systems like RSA, a lot of the first generation of crypto systems was actually patented, and they couldn't be used beyond certain, you know, circles. They couldn't be used without being licensed until, you know, many decades when a patent might expire. Now, the thing that's happened that's been very interesting about the Ethereum-adjacent cryptography worlds is this is not the pattern, and I think that's a direct result of how Ethereum approaches things. There's almost like an immune system that's been built up, that's been carried over from Ethereum.
Is it an immune system, or is it like being able to see the lost upside from not having something being well distributed?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Ethereum is a demonstration, it's a proof of existence of what happens when you take that kind of, I guess, more subtractive, more space-creating approach. And so the folks who start thinking about cryptography see, well, the proof is in the pudding. This is actually a very pragmatic way to be. This is a very grounded thing. It's not just a nice-sounding statement.
I couldn't help but, like, track on the fact that you used the word expire in relation to patents, and that's another fun one of these spire kind of terms, right? Like expire, like there's no more breathing, the breath goes out of it. And I'm thinking, of course, we've done a little bit of prep and talking about some of these things, and one of the things that I was kind of struck by, Brian, was when you were telling me a little bit about how ZeroX Park thinks about its own institutional design and this idea of expiration or limitation, this understanding that you yourself are kind of a spiritual predecessor for something and you want to take that seriously by making some design choices now, while those design choices, you know, can be a through line for you. Can you say a little bit to that?
Yeah, so one thing that some folks here might not know is that when we first started ZeroX Park and started putting together this community around, I guess it was late 2021, we embedded in it basically from the start that after 2 years, by default, ZeroX Park actually ought to expire. And that would be the default, and it would have to be an intentional choice on our part to continue working on it and potentially even refactoring significantly what its focus was and what its role in the ecosystem was if we wanted to keep doing this beyond late 2023. And that actually ended up influencing a lot of our decisions on how we decided to do certain things in the first 12 months, 18 months. By default, there was more of a willingness to let go of things, whether that means let go of research directions that might not be panning out and which we, you know, didn't feel the pressure then to double down on. It might mean letting go in terms of, well, actually there is something that's going really well. Let's let go of that to the wider community as well. And, you know, when we rounded out the corner on 2 years, by that time, that willingness to think more, I don't know if the right word is like expansively or ephemerally or exactly what it is, that was sort of embedded in our thinking and how we, you know, would just decide whether, how to operate different projects.
Well, we've talked about how subtraction is expansive, right? And I think that possibly also goes for institutions, but I'm always torn, or not torn, but there's a tension there, because I think long-lasting institutions matter too, right? It's kind of cool. You almost have like a distributed time preference thing for how long you want institutions to last. Maybe there's an aesthetic time preference distribution, but like when you think about the next 1,000 years, it would be pretty easy to imagine Oxford making it for another 1,000 years. Pretty easy to imagine like Kenshoji Temple in Kamakura, Japan, making it for, you know, into another 1,000 years. But you know, it's harder to think about that with like tech stuff, because I think it just does feel more like ablative or more temporary and kind of up in Stuart Brand has an image that I should have thrown on the presentation here for pace layers, where you can see that things kind of have their own temporality to them. And of course, like, we're used to tech companies that don't really last too long, or they become consulting companies like IBM or something. They change their nature, go down the stack. But it's interesting to think about why a permanent Oxford, like an eternal Oxford, would be like a dimensionally flattening move. And that, like, something like 0x Park only having like a 2-year mandate or a 5-year mandate or something can be expansive. I mean, Aya, you've thought about this a lot, probably in the context of the Ethereum Foundation too. It's like, can you speak a little bit to how the subtraction mindset, this philosophy of subtraction, this idea of expansion, has influenced how you've thought about the design of Ethereum? Ethereum Foundation?
Yeah, dimension. Yeah, I think it's, well, there are many dimensions that you can see with subtraction, but I want to talk about like time dimension that we often tend to, when we say subtraction, especially as an organization, people immediately think about the size, you know, when you say subtraction and addition. Maybe one example I can use is people at the Ethereum Foundation, we don't really enforce it, but since we have the subtraction as the guiding principle, I've been impressed that people are discussing it more like seriously. And then the other day, I saw this Notion page from one of the teams describing this technical strategy of a project, and then the order of execution, it starts with the research phase, and next it's prototype, and then normally you would go to a production phase. Instead, they're like, oh, let's call it subtraction. And then what it does, it's not really about how much, because this is actually working with a team outside of EF together. It's not about how much the EF team does less, but it's more like by subtracting, you're thinking about the long-term, like future time, like if we do more, how would this affect to the ecosystem, right? So the dimension is not just about the size and then time frame, like it's like, but then there are so many different layers of this that can expand by, like, and then the important part is like knowing that we have the option. It's not like we're telling everyone to always subtract. It's more like we don't really notice that that's an option often. And then, but having that as a habit, like thinking that it as a habit, not really to enforce it. It's more like thinking about it, always thinking about it, would bring us more dimensions, more longer term, and that's why I think subtraction is actually a strategy to the long-term thinking.
Yeah, and so that subtraction is like one way of creating space for other things to come in and for having some inspiring other projects in a certain way. But I think as we kind of come to the end of this session, I think I'd like to touch on the limitations of inspiration and the limitations of even spiritual predecessors, right? Like spiritual predecessors and design inspiration can only take you so far. And then what happens? Like what happens next? How do you explore a new space that has never been explored before? Do you have some thoughts on that? Like how would you go about exploring it? So we're talking about high dimensional spaces, all this extra freedom, all this extra stuff. How do you navigate when there's nothing to navigate by?
There's always something to navigate by.
Yeah, I like that.
I think so. There's this interesting result in reinforcement learning. So when you try to get computers to learn things where you don't have training data, you just know whether they've failed. And what you realize is that when you're in an environment where it's really hard for you to get any form of reward at the beginning, or just like almost zero signal about whether you're doing well or not, the thing that works the best and is the most robust is curiosity-driven learning. So essentially, you try to surprise yourself and your world model. And so I think that that's kind of like a meta-navigation when you don't know how to navigate. I think that when people talk about aesthetic, what they're talking about is some form of like unlegible intuition as to what is better. That must be somewhere in their brain. And so I think like do not underestimate the power of aesthetic and good taste when you're navigating things that are unnavigatable, because they're actually probably somewhere grounded into. I wouldn't be surprised if I were to put like my evolutionary psychology hat that aesthetic is how we navigate unnavigatable things, you know?
Like aesthetic intuitions? Yeah. And a fun thing that I want to add to that is the idea of good taste that you brought up, which is funny. Like, we're tempted always to think that the opposite of good taste is bad taste, but the opposite of good taste is no taste. You know, so like actually your taste is a positive content kind of thing, and you can use it to guide yourself even when there's nothing else to guide. Brian, how do you explore high dimensional spaces you've never been in before?
Yeah, I think that so much of it is just about what is the topology of the environment that you're putting yourself in. If you're putting yourself in an environment where there is a lot of space and there isn't an impulse to, sometimes we use the phrase snap to grid, snap to something legible that can be easily understood, whether that's snapping to a goal function or snapping to a narrative that is easy to understand, that is rewarded by the surrounding context. If you can sort of suspend yourself in a space of uncertainty for a little longer, just allow yourself to be confused, that's a way to allow yourself to be curious. It makes it easier to do so. And so that's one of the things that I was thinking about when I was thinking, oh, you know, when we first came into the Ethereum space, there was a lot of space, and that made it easier to navigate those kinds of high-dimensional, multi-dimensional considerations.
So Aya, 10 years into the DevCon experiment worth doing, I'm sure you've felt at times that you're navigating a high-dimensional space. And I would love to hear, as we have a few more seconds to wrap this up, I'd love to give you the last word and hear how you think about your adventure, your exploration into the unknown with DevCon, how that's been. Maybe just a final word for ending decade zero.
I thought you were going to, okay, give another monologue in the end. But if you have noticed, DevCon is not every year now, right? And that's another thing we pushed. So the thinking, speaking of subtraction does bring more quality. It has to. So the idea is, because there are many Ethereum events out there now, if DevCon still is needed, it has to be very, very special. Has to be very, very special. I do say this to the DevCon team all the time. Otherwise, we don't need more addition, right? And then, so that's the decade of, I was not involved in all DevCons, but yeah.
And I want another 40 minutes on the clock so we can have that conversation about how to keep DevCon special, but we're running out of time. So I'm sure this conversation's just getting started. And I want to once again thank the DevCon team here, the Ethereum Foundation, of course, Justin, Brian, and Aya for bringing this discussion into being. And thank you all for staying, closing DevCon 7 with us. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Nick. Thank you, Aya. Thank you, GovSheaf. I have an immense amount of respect for Nick to be able to walk us through a philosophical discussion like that. GubShape and Justin, if you're not aware, their team is responsible for all of the frogs you see around the venue. So huge round of applause for that. Just that activity, I think, is incredible. And of course, Aya, you're an inspiration for everyone. Thank you so much. Now we have a short recap of the week.
Now more than ever, building on Ethereum is not only for idealistic reasons.
Ethereum is hope. Ethereum is hope. That's what it is for me.
This is the most global DevCon ever.
I think DEF CON shows the strength of the Ethereum ecosystem and really highlights the concept of the Infinite Garden.
Welcome to DEF CON Southeast Asia. Amazing, amazing. What a month these 4 days have been, huh? All right, so I would like to invite up two team members who are from Thailand. O, who is our community supporter, who has been working tireless for the past few months. Yes. And Winnie, who is one of our production magicians helping make this event what you saw it was. So please come on stage.
สวัสดีครับ I want to start off with this photo. This was the closing ceremony in DEF CON Bogota. It was exactly 2 years, 1 month, 1 day since this video was taken. 2 years ago and one DEF CON ago, I was part of the audience like you guys. Today, I'm part of the DEF CON team. So, I can only do this because how open and collaborative DEF CON team is, so I thank you for that. And it's only because you guys are willing to make it, make the travel all the way here to Southeast Asia to make this DEF CON see happen. That is why I'm able to stand here to make this magical moment happening in Southeast Asia. So I thank you all for enabling me to stand here. So as part of my job with the DEF CON team, I support communities. And speaking of communities, we need to speak about Road to DEF CON program. Road to DEF CON program is a program initiated over a year ago to allow local communities across Southeast Asia and nearby to organize their own independent Ethereum event, bringing awareness and excitement on the way to DEF CON. We gave out 103 grants to 103 events in 15 countries and in 64 communities. That's about 2 events a week, or about 1 Road to DEF CON event every 3.5 days, all the way in 2024. So please, can I get a round of applause to all the Road to DEF CON communities that made this possible? And this is what Road to DEF CON looks like in Southeast Asia, beyond Southeast Asia, in homes, and also literal Road to DEF CON. So we had two Road to DEF CON events coming from Phnom Penh, Cambodia, thanks to Rithi, And also from Chiang Mai, Thailand, thank to Shaka for making this happen. So some of you might wonder, okay, you know, Road to DEF CON is all that great, you know, for the local communities, but what about the DEF CON itself, right? Is it really making an impact to the local communities in Southeast Asia? So these are some of the praises that we had from early attendees on the first day, and the feedbacks have reverberated across the communities, drawing more excitement and interest from those outside of Ethereum ecosystem to join. People actually walk in a lot each day just to ask for tickets to get in. We also have some funny and creative compliments here. On the left here, someone said, I told my son that you must skip school tomorrow and come to DEF CON. Right? I'm not sure in how many lifetime will we have another event with 10K builders flying to Thailand to create this experience. It's worth it to drop them. On the other hand, you can skip school the entire week because, you know, why not? Right? I can do my homework from DEF CON anyway. Another highlight for me is that we also had a Thai member of parliament who joined us among the attendees. He made a video coverage of DEF CON on TikTok. He even explained what EIP is and describing how CK passport work, right? Now tell me, you know, how you can think that Ethereum is not going to expand into the real world with this. So when I say that locals praise this event, I really mean it, you know. They are not complimenting in words, not in sentences, not in paragraphs. They are making essays, you know, to compliment DEF CON. So I believe that I can say that on behalf of Southeast Asia and Thailand, we really thank you for being here. You are not only just making a dent in the Ethereum ecosystem, but you are making a difference in Southeast Asia. So I really, really thank you all for being here. So now, that's the community and the impact so far. Now, onto the event production by Winnie.
All right. Thank you so much, O. Thank you. And I would like to say again, sawasdee ka, and welcome everyone to our beloved hometown, Bangkok, once again. As a part of production, as Skylar has already mentioned in the opening, that we wanted to make this event not only for Thailand, but for all of Southeast Asia's as a community. So one thing that you may have noticed if you're traveling all around Southeast Asia countries, we have so many things in differences, but also we share and share it so many things in common, such as cultures. And we try to account for all of these into production of the stages, visuals, vibes that you have seen, all elements and beautiful things that we created in these menus. Also, from the steps that you walk in to the food that you have been eating. I know so far that we have a very good comments about the foods here. So all throughout the weeks, you have been not just eating Thai food, but you also experience the food that represents of many countries from around Asia, which is more than 30 menus that we have selected. And the most important part for the production, what makes DEF CON different? For me, I work in events for 7 years. And I would say DEF CON is a magical process. And also, I know you feel that too when you have coming into these spaces. Being not just a conference with many talks and sessions, but also so many activities happen around Hacker Cave with the communities, the compression room activities, discussion corners, and all of the music stage. All of these elements combine together to make the DEF CON an unconventional event ever. And these are also the proofs that I would like you to witness, as I hear so many parts of all event producers have said to me that this is the biggest and the most unconventional event that they have ever seen and built in Bangkok. And of course, guys, even though I missed, but this is the most fun and beautiful stats I have seen. We have given 960 massage from 10 massagers. I know that 960 of you are a very, very fortunate one to get. Okay, and this is all the productions. I hope you have a very great time. We have so much pushing in efforts for all these DevCon.
Amazing. Thank you, and สวัสดีครับ.
Let's give a huge round of applause to Winnie and to O. Without them, this event would not be what it is, what it was. They say of these 960 massages, they were only occupied by 10 people. So I'm not sure what a lot of you guys are doing. But other stats that I actually really like. We have reached over 12,500 people, not just that have tickets, but that have actually showed up here. Like showed up here and participated in DevCon. 12,500. This is more than double the past DevCon we had 2 years ago. We have representation here from over 130 countries. The top five countries are US with 1,800, Thailand with 1,500, India with 1,049, United Kingdom with 500, and Singapore with 500 as well. So, and many, many more countries, obviously, 130 countries from around the world have come here to DevCon, and we are stoked to see that at the most global DevCon ever. Now, 60% of the people who have come here, this was their first DevCon. This was their first, maybe, introduction to Ethereum. So that was also super exciting to see. We have had over 750 speakers, and I say instructors as well because we obviously had workshops, and this does not include the many of you who were instructing and speaking at your own community hubs or in the discussion corners, of which there were probably hundreds more. We have over 300 hours of content. So hope you get those streaming subscriptions or check out StreamEth afterwards because there's a lot to do, lots of review. And we had 3,000 question and answers issued through the Meerkat platform, which many of you participated in to interact with the speakers. And so we had all that content, all those questions, all of these talks and speakers. And so what did we learn? What were the takeaways? And I think there's a few things. There's a few things that we want to highlight. I'd say, one, Ethereum has scaled, right? So we heard this in Vitalik's talk in the opening. We heard it from Hart in his talk. We heard it from Bartek in his talk. We have, I'll just quote this. This year, L2 fees went down from 50 cents to less than 1 cent. This is a huge change. Bartek says, 4 years after announcing rollup-centric roadmap, we've launched almost 50 rollups. The cost of transactions, Ethereum just plummeted. Now you can run a transaction for just pennies, said Hart. And this is clear. I think this is clear for many of us using this now. Ethereum no longer is struggling with these massive scaling problems that we've had for many years, and we've scaled. I would say also, L2s are great for Ethereum. We've seen this both from Mike, who was talking about L2s and their relationship to Ethereum, growing the ecosystem, and the relation to the ETH, the asset, and Marek, who was explaining how Celo has recently transitioned from an L1 to an L2 to join the Ethereum ecosystem and bring all of their ecosystem now together, unified with us. So I would say L2s are not only just great for Ethereum, L2s are Ethereum. The UX is improved and ready for the masses. We had an entire track on usability. We had workshops around usability. We had an account abstraction hub, of which I hope many of you got to participate in. We discussed things around user interfaces, around gas fees being low, gas sponsoring, cross L2 user experience, for which Hart says, we want Ethereum to feel like one chain again. And this is what is happening. Ethereum is feeling like one chain again, finally, thanks to improvements like ERC-4337, ERC-7683, RIP-7702, ERC-3668. I can go on. But all of this has been discussed here this week, and it's super exciting to see that finally the user experience with Ethereum is improving, and your grandmother soon will be able to use it. Also, we covered, why we are here, right? So I will actually read these two quotes out. Peter said, we shouldn't assume the particular transparency of an existing technology is some kind of moral or ethical imperative, rather than a mere technological accident or a temporary limitation. And Harry Halpin reminded us that we must believe that all humans should have the right to use strong cryptography, the right to transact freely, and the right of freedom of speech. And these are important values, and they're not exclusively the only values we need to care about. We need to care about open global participation, the importance of credible neutrality, cooperative mindsets, many, many more. But this is what we covered in the Cypherpunk and privacy track. and what many of you got to listen to and be reminded of throughout this week. Also, we got to look at, we got to see Ethereum through a new light, right? A new perspective on what is Ethereum, what is crypto. Ethereum as a defensive technology, as one of the defensive technologies that we should be working through DAC Day. So there were many of you who participated in DAC Day, defensive accelerationism, and I'll read a couple quotes out here. Vitalik talks about cyber defense being where all reasonable people agree who the hacker is, cryptography, ZKPs, etc. help here. Info defense, somewhat help here. Reasonable people can't agree on who the attacker is. We need technologists to help filter through this info. But I think you can look at Ethereum now and crypto as a defensive technology. And we now realize why defensive technology is needed in this era and in the eras coming up, and why we should focus on that, why this should be an intentional development of defensive technology. We also got to see what is the relationship between Ethereum and programmable cryptography. So both Justin and Gubsheep, who you just saw up here on stage, discuss a lot about the next generation of cryptography. We are now able to use the next generation of cryptography. It's been theoretical for many years, and it is finally becoming practical to actually build applications with it. And the next generation of cryptography plus Ethereum enables applications that we've just simply never been able to build before. And this is extremely exciting, right? So there was an entire community-led session today. It was called Programmable Cryptography. All of the frog-related stuff is all about programmable cryptography. It's fun, it's gimmicky, but there's actually real stuff happening behind the scenes, right? Every time you scan a QR code, you're getting a pod. You are interacting with programmable cryptography. Every single ticket you received was a pod inside of ZooPass, which is a piece of programmable cryptography. And all of this, in combination with Ethereum, enables things that we have never been able to build before. So all of that content was covered in the programmable cryptography track, applied cryptography track, and more. And lastly, what we saw here, what we saw this week, was that the Ethereum community is global and it is vibrant, right? I just love looking at this map that we had down there, and I appreciate it for all of you that put pins in, and I bet you there are many more who did not. But it's just impressive to see where everyone has come from, all the locations that everyone has come from. And the other thing I really, really love to see was the community hubs. I want to give a big round of applause for everyone who organized one of these community hubs or contributed to one of these community hubs, because they were absolutely incredible. I think that is one of the things that separates DevCon and this community out from many others, right? Like, this was an incredibly unique experience. The content, the programming that you had throughout there, the passion that you showed and exhibited in these community hubs were incredible. So thank you once again, and just another testament to how vibrant this community really is. And all of this is actually, all of the talks that we just talked about, all the narratives you can find already recorded and live on our DevCon app. The ones from today should be there soon, and soon you'll be able to ask Diva AI if you have any questions around these talks and want to learn more about them. So stay tuned for that. But back to what are we here for, right? Like, what do we actually want to achieve out of DevCon? Do we want to have a cool event with, these are things we do want. We want to have a cool event. We want you guys to be happy. We want the Wi-Fi to finally work for once, which I actually think it did pretty well. I don't know. Round of applause for that. I don't know how many DevCons it's been since that actually worked. We also want good food and all these things, but really, our ultimate goal, what is our ultimate goal? Our goal is to improve Ethereum, right? And use Ethereum to improve humanity. This is kind of the goal that we're here working towards. And the goal here specifically is that we hope that you all can contribute to this goal, right? Like, whether that means creating an app that eventually onboards millions and does so while inheriting the values that we care about, or it's building infrastructure that also inherits and abides the values that we care about, making more education for those to spread awareness of what Ethereum is, how you can use it both like in your local community, in your government, things like this, or it's like just community efforts in general. All of those, I think, would be amazing to see come out of this event. And what we want to see really is someone who impacts the future and impacts the future by building or contributing to Ethereum somehow. And perhaps that person right now is attending DevCon and being exposed to Ethereum for their first time, right? Like, just as Nick reminded us in the panel, this is decade zero of DevCon. We are focused on long-term goals. We are looking at the true impact of DevCon might not even be seen for many years from now, right? Like, hopefully, the people who are sitting in this room for the first time getting exposed to DevCon, it might take you a few years to actually have this massive impact, but I absolutely believe you can. In fact, it's the same thing that all of us have done, right? We've all attended our first DevCon. We got exposed to our first Ethereum content at some point and have gone on from there. And so I would say now is the time to get involved. Now is the time to dive deeper. And this is what I would say is the ultimate goal of DevCon, why we're here. And so what's next, right? What is next? We are concluding DevCon Southeast Asia. What is coming up next? DevCon 2026. So DevCon happens every 2 years, right? Like, why do we do it every 2 years? I'd say there's a few reasons. For one, we want it to be significant. We want it to be special. So DevCon happening every 2 years makes us like really appreciate this gathering, this worldwide global gathering of the Ethereum community much, much more. It also allows us to focus on the road to DevCon, right? So what O presented earlier, all of these efforts that we put into this region to help support the community, this has all happened through the road to DevCon, which takes time. And so we will hope to work on the road to DevCon over the next 2 years. And lastly, this event just takes time. It takes time to put on. It takes a lot of time. We basically start over every year we go somewhere new. And so this will be where we end up. I mean, so this will be when we have next DevCon. But next year, we will have DevConnect. So DevConnect, many of you are familiar with, but some of you are not. DevConnect is a different type of event entirely, right? DevConnect is our event where we delegate, we let the community create the content, largely. So it's a week of many independent events, unlike this one, right? Here, everyone is in the same venue. Everyone is together. We are all cross-collaborating. You can get all types of content here. At DevCon, at DevConnect, there are many independent events, all focused on specific domains, specific themes, and they are all organized by those who are most familiar with those domains, with those themes. And so this allows us to go a lot deeper, to dive deeper into DevConnect or into these themes. And this will happen next year. So where? It's an open question. And the forum is open. So we have the DevCon forum. And actually, like, if you look up here, this was one of the proposals, one of many, maybe even 100 proposals for where we should bring DevCon 2024, and it was actually created by O, none other than O, who wasn't on our team at that point, but this was one of the proposals that we created, that he created and that we reviewed while looking at all of the countries in Southeast Asia and beyond. And so there are proposals open for where to bring not just DevCon, not just DevConnect, but also also Ethereum events in general. So we have a proposal, we have a forum, forum.devcon.org. And I know there are more people, more organizations, like ETH Global included, that look at this forum to see where they should bring their events in the future. And so if you want to propose your location there, it's also a good way to gather your community together. And maybe you end up hosting your own event. So let's see here. Oh, I would like to invite back up O and Winnie to cover something special that's happening today. So O, Winnie. Give a round of applause for Owen Winnie. All right.
Test. Okay. So as some of you might know, some of you might not, today is like a Tong Day, right? So I would like to summarize it quickly. I took out an excerpt from the internet. So it's an excerpt by Simon de la Loubert, a French diplomat to Siam, or Thailand back then, in 1687. So that's about like 300 years ago. What he said is that the Siamese have also form religious shows. When the water begins to retreat, the people returns them thanks for several nights together with a great illumination. Not only for that they are retired, but for the fertility which they render to the lands. I think this is really well with our closing day today, where the water, which is all of you, have flowed from all across the globe, convened in a single place right now, and we are about to depart and going back to our homelands. But what you are leaving behind in Southeast Asia is the fertility which will grow the Ethereum ecosystem further from today and onwards. So today we'd like to invite you all to celebrate with us in the Logatong Day, not for just the cultural experience, but also for the Ethereum ecosystem in Southeast Asia itself.
Raise the nose. So there's going to be a lot of activities going on around Bangkok, so it'll be crowded and super traffic. Along the lakeside, there's going to be a Logatong kind of festival events going on as well, so you are open to join after. But we are going to celebrate a very spacious and secret Logatong in a DEFCON way. So stay tuned, and after, just be careful and let's use the metro because it's going to be very traffic.
Cool, thank you, Winnie, thank you all. You can sit up here. Or actually, yeah, done. I'd like to invite up Aya at this point. Everyone, this is Aya, the Executive Director of the Ethereum Foundation. Give a round of applause for Aya.
Right.
I don't know.
Okay. I'd like to just ask, well, I said on the panel that if Ethereum still needs DevCon, it has to be very, very special. So I'd like to ask a question to the audience. Was this DevCon special to you? Was this DevCon very magical to you? I'd like to welcome the team who made that happen.
Invite the team.
DevCon team.
Nice. Yeah, I guess walk all the way in, all the way. Or stay in the center.
So with the size of the audience more than doubled, this making keeping the quality professional, still yet unique, and Ethereum, that wasn't easy, and these are the people who made that magic happen. So please give them big round of applause.
Amazing. Thank you, Aya. And I think one of the coolest things about this team is actually that of these 18-ish people, we are representing 13 different countries. So maybe step aside for a second so we can see exactly where we are from around the world. But one of the coolest things also is that, like, this event was put on by much more than just this team here, right? We've been working on this for a year, some of us 2 years, to make this event happen. But there are, of course, many more people involved in making this happen, in particular the volunteers. So I would also like to invite up the volunteer leads to the stage. Volunteer leads, can you please come up to the stage? And all volunteers, can you please stand up, and let's give a massive round of applause for all of these volunteers. They're what made this event happen. And on the map here, you can see this is where Once we sum up all of the volunteers, all of our team, this is where everyone's coming from, right? Like, I think this is an incredible representation of the Ethereum community and is one of its strengths, is its diversity. So let's come together and take a photo. Let's take a photo. Quick photo. Okay. Hurry up. right, amazing. Okay, with this, we conclude the opening ceremony. And I want to say thank you all for coming to DevCon Southeast Asia. Thank you for joining us here today. And let's take this, let's use this as inspiration to go out and build and contribute and hopefully, eventually improve humanity. Thank you all.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to visit archive.devcon.org to watch and listen to all the other DevCon talks. We look forward to seeing you next time.